Well, it's over. They are calling it the greatest political comeback in our lifetime. Trump has been pummeled and abused. His family has been tormented. His friends for 7 straight years. And yet Trump still manages to keep winning. And not just winning, but dominating. And he's not just sneaking past his opponents. I mean, he dominates and bulldozes anybody in his way. I mean, this man is the most beloved politician that we have ever seen. His followers are so incredibly loyal, despite everything that he's been. In fact, not despite of it, but because of it. And he is also, in a sense, the most hated politician in America. That's usually how it works. He's a polarizing figure. But you're talking 2 impeachments. I mean, he was accused of for years of being a Russian spy, accused of staging an insurrection. 4 indictments. He was banned from running a business in New York State, fined $350 million, thrown off of ballots. I mean, he's had friends who have been thrown into prison for no reason other than the fact that they're associated with Trump. We are living in the Soviet Union. I mean, it's amazing that he has not been poisoned with nerve gas. I mean, so persecuted. He's treated worse than an Iranian dissident is treated by the Ayatollah. And yet Trump keeps on winning. The media is totally baffled. The media is sitting there scratching their head. How do we get rid of this man? So huge Super Tuesday, obviously. Trump clinches the nomination. Nikki Haley has made a concession speech. It was egregious, her concession speech. And we have so much else to get to. But can you believe that she did not endorse Trump even at this point, even as she's bowing out of the race? And not only that she's bowing out of the race, but Trump has literally just totally destroyed and demolished Nikki Haley. I mean, he has so many supporters and Nikki Haley doesn't have the decency, doesn't have the self-respect and the dignity to go out graciously and say, I hereby endorse President Trump. Never mind that she's breaking the pledge that she made and by participating in the Republican debates, but just for the sake of the party and for the sake of unity. And what are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me, well, Nikki Haley, she's worried. She's trying to appeal to the leftist base of the party. She's trying to appeal to the never Trumpers or the people who don't like President Trump. So she's worried about alienating them. You really believe that there's somebody out there? I understand for whatever reason. I'm not talking about the Democrat voters who voted for Haley, which are the majority of Nikki Haley voters. But you tell me there are Republicans out there who like Nikki Haley. They view her as an alternative to Trump. They don't like Trump's nasty tweets and they don't like January 6th. And they're going to somehow be put off by Haley if she says, listen, for the sake of unifying the party, let me throw my support to the man that I pledged that I was going to support. Here's what Nikki Haley said. A lot of other stuff to get to, but Nikki Haley said that, quote, it is now up to Donald Trump. She did not endorse him. She said she wishes him well. That was the closest she got. And then she said, well, I wish everybody well. So, I mean, it's really a disgraceful speech. And I know somebody who's married to somebody who's like a big time Nikki Haley advisor and strategist. And I'm sorry about this. I really am. And I've said all the positives about the Nikki Haley campaign. And I think they did a lot. They used a lot of brilliant strategies here. And they far exceeded all expectations. But this is a disgrace. She said, quote, it's now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of this party and beyond who did not support him. Who do you mean by that? Do you mean the Democrats? Trump has to earn the votes of the Democrats who voted for Nikki Haley because she got a lot of votes in all these open primaries where Democrats can cross over. Who is she referring to? But like, it's up to Donald Trump to earn the votes. Are you kidding me? This man is the winningest Republican that we have ever seen. He literally crushes anybody that stands in his way. He has brought down the Clintons. He's brought down the Bushes. He brought down Ron DeSantis. And you're telling me, and he probably brought down Joe Biden, except that the election was rigged. And you tell me that he needs to earn votes? I mean, that is just such incredible disrespect on the part of Nikki Haley. And she refused to endorse him. She quoted Margaret Thatcher, who said, you should never follow the crowd. Okay, you should never follow the crowd. So what does that mean? So you're telling me that Trump has the support of about 65, 70, 80 million Republicans throughout the country, and Nikki Haley's sitting here conceding the Republican nomination, and she's not supposed to go with the crowd? Like, who are you supposed to follow? You're not following the crowd. Mike Pence? Maybe, you know, Mike Pence? You're certainly not following the crowd if you go and endorse Mike Pence. So here's what she said. She said, I wish him well, talking about Trump. And then she qualified that and she says, but I wish anybody well who eventually might become the president of the United States. So I would wish anyone well. So she's literally saying, listen, I'm not endorsing Trump, but I'm wishing him well. But in case you think that it means something that I'm wishing him well, what I would wish anybody well in this position. So I would wish Vladimir Putin well if he was the one. I'd wish the Ayatollah well too. I'd wish well, you know, and like that, really, like that's how low you've sunk. And then she mentions in her concession speech, she didn't mention anything about the border. She didn't mention anything about inflation and the economy. She mentioned socialism, but she mentioned Ukraine funding. You're giving a concession speech here about the Republican nomination. You don't mention the border. You don't mention inflation, but you're talking about helping Ukraine. Okay. This is just bizarre. All right. So we'll get to some other things here, but really, really very disappointing there on the part of Nikki Haley. President Biden has flown in 320,000 illegals into the United States. They literally ordered a ride. He's flown them in from foreign countries, and they're illegal. And they're not even asylum seekers. They've ordered a ride on an app. Biden swooped in, literally sent them a chartered flight, flew them into the United States, released them into society, and they didn't even actually have to make it to the Mexican border. They were literally just ordered the, or, you know, on the app, just, hey, can I have a ride? And they ordered it. It's like Uber. President Biden is like a giant flight airplane Uber for illegals who want to come from Mexico and Guatemala. I know it sounds surreal, and this is why Alejandro Mayorkas was impeached. So we'll bring you all those stunning details coming up. Things have gotten so bad in the New York City subway system that Governor Hochul is calling in the National Guard to protect the New York City subways. How about putting people in jail? Did you ever think of that? Merrick Garland is cracking down on voter ID laws because Merrick Garland, Attorney General, he says that voter ID laws are racist against blacks. He says that requiring somebody to show their driver's license or to show a picture ID in order to vote is racist. I don't know who's the racist exactly. I think Merrick Garland, he apparently thinks that blacks are not capable of obtaining a driver's license or a photo ID. Sounds like he's the racist. All right, Michelle Obama says that she's not going to be running. So we'll get into all that coming up. Michelle Obama says she's not going to be running for president this year in 2024. So a lot of people have said to me, well, I've predicted that Michelle Obama might be the nominee, that she actually might be the person who ends up running. And she's announced that, and a lot of people have predicted that. That's why she came out and made the statement. So here's the question. And by the way, you know, I don't believe that Biden is going to be the nominee. I've said that many times. I've gone on record. The question is all only how it's going to play out. But, you know, as far as Michelle Obama goes, I'm not saying that I believe that Michelle Obama will definitely be the nominee. Those two things are not necessarily interconnected, meaning I think it's very, very likely that Biden's not going to be the nominee. I may end up being wrong about that, but I don't think that Michelle Obama is necessarily going to be the replacement. I mean, it could be Gavin Newsom. There are a bunch of other Democrats that might run. But I also don't believe just because Michelle Obama says that she's not going to run, that means that Michelle Obama is not going to run. Because as we know, people in politics, Nikki Haley said that she was going to endorse whoever the nominee was. And Trump's the nominee. She's not endorsing him. So people in politics occasionally tend to renege on their words. I know that's going to come as quite a shock. So we'll get to that coming up. The State of the Union address is coming up Thursday night, and President Biden is going to be standing there in front of the world, somehow trying to survive and somehow trying to just get through it. And, you know, they keep lowering the bar for success here on the Biden speeches and the Biden State of the Unions because obviously, you know, this is a very big deal because they're afraid to have Biden stand in front of cameras for 3 minutes and answer questions without getting confused and or tripping over himself. And now here he's going to be up there for at least 45 minutes. And, you know, you really wonder if anything major is going to happen or if he gets through it. I mean, they're going to have to, like, pump him full of some sort of drug. But they keep lowering the bar. Remember back in the beginning, it was like, all right, let's see if he can get through the 45 minutes or an hour State of the Union address without making a massive blunder. And it was like, you know, usually you want to see something positive. But it was like if Biden manages to get through it without a huge gaffe or a huge blunder back in the beginning, that was a big success. Like, wow, what a successful State of the Union. Well, what did he say? Did he say anything good? Did he excite people? Did he get standing ovations? No. Well, what did he do? Well, he managed to get through it without doing anything super embarrassing. Oh, well, great. Then, like the following year, it was like, can he get through it without falling asleep? You know, and like, some of us cannot get through it without falling asleep, a Biden State of the Union. But he stayed awake the whole time. Wow, look at him. He's really amazing. And they just keep lowering expectations. And now it's like, can he get through 45 minutes and still have a pulse at the end of it? So we're going to have to keep an eye on that. The White House has ended its policy Get this. The White House has finally ended the policy of giving a COVID test to any visitor who meets with President Biden or anybody who meets with President Biden, even his advisors. I cannot believe this is like a mental illness at this point. If anybody is still requiring COVID tests for anything at this point, I mean, they're just mentally ill. It's just insanity. And I was shocked. I couldn't believe that I haven't visited the White House recently. And it's like, do you have cocaine on you? Because that's okay. You can come into the White House and be a few feet from the Oval Office with a bag of cocaine, but we better test for COVID. And they're still testing people for COVID. They literally have just ended that policy. I mean, they're about 3 years behind all the rest of us. And unbelievable. And the White House is also, I would add, suspending testing for the bubonic plague and for polio. And the White House is no longer going to do a background check. Anybody who meets with President Biden, a background check to weed out any sort of KGB spies or KGB agents who are working for Joseph Stalin. So the White House says that this new policy, this change in policy, this aligns with the new CDC guidance. So apparently the CDC just last week, I mean, do you see, these are the people who are supposed to get us through a pandemic. These are the people who are supposed to be determining government health policies. And they're so far behind the rest of us. The new CDC guidance last week relaxed the recommendation that anybody who tests positive for COVID needs to isolate for 5 days. Can you believe this? I mean, they're so irrelevant and they're living in the dark ages, in the Flintstone era, in the caveman era. Now the CDC says people can return to work if their symptoms are mild and it has been a day since they've had fever. And in other news, the CDC just confirmed that the earth is round. The Soviet Union has been dismantled and they basically have stopped using rotary phones and fax machines. And if carrier pigeons are not available, then they actually use smartphones and cell phones. You can't make this stuff up. All right. As I said, Trump has clinched the nomination. Trump clinched the nomination in November. But, don't tell that to Nikki Haley and the media. Don't tell that to all the people who gave millions of dollars to Nikki Haley for all these months. I don't know what they were thinking. And this played out pretty much the way we predicted it would play out. We predicted that Ron DeSantis would drop out of the race after Iowa. That's exactly what happened after, obviously, he had a very, very disappointing showing in Iowa, which was not unexpected. And then we predicted, I said Nikki Haley gets through South Carolina. I thought she'd get to South Carolina, and I thought at that point, because she was the governor, that was her home state, and we knew, you know, that she would have a very, very paltry and poor turnout there, and she was crushed. I mean, she was obliterated in South Carolina. I thought she would drop out after South Carolina. Then when that did not happen, of course, we said, all right, she's certainly dropping out right after Super Tuesday. That's exactly how it went down. I don't understand. I cannot possibly fathom why Nikki Haley waits until after Super Tuesday. She could have dropped out with a shred of dignity, Super Tuesday. I mean, there have been other candidates who have clinched it by Super Tuesday, but they'll win like 4 or 5 states or 3 or 4 states out of 15. And the handwriting's on the wall. Usually that's enough because they have a big margin. This Trump, this clinching of Trump, I mean, this is one of the widest margins and the earliest to have this wide a margin. I mean, Trump, he just has so many more delegates than anybody else. Nikki Haley has a few and that's it. So he dominated. So why didn't Nikki Haley just pull out a week before Super Tuesday and retain some dignity without getting just humiliated? I mean, Trump, he ran the table other than Vermont and D.C. And Vermont and D.C., they are so incredibly leftist. They are so socialist. So why she waited, I don't know. But either way, the media is devastated. The media is frantic because the media knows that Biden has no chance in November. The media knows that he is the weakest possible candidate. And the media despises Trump. So right now the media is undergoing intense electric shock therapy and they're like grabbing Prozac and grabbing like every possible drug and opioid that they can find to try to cope. I mean, because the media, they just cannot cope with this. You see, here's why the media is so baffled. The politicians are baffled looking at Trump and saying, what? How on earth does he do this? And they look at him, they in a condescending way, they look down on him for the most part. And I don't even just mean Democrats, Republicans, people like Mitch McConnell. People like Paul Ryan, a lot of these people, they like, look, some of them get it. Rand Paul gets it. Kevin McCarthy gets it. But they look at him and it's like, he's so juvenile. He's so immature. He says these shocking things. He says that Russia should bomb NATO countries and he calls Mexicans animals and vermin. And he says they're invading the country. And when Trump sends out a tweet, you think he takes a bunch of polls? You think he goes and speaks to his strategists and goes back and forth and figures out, all right, what kind of tweet are people going to like before he goes and gives a holds a press conference or does an interview, all right, we got to take 17 polls to figure out not to say the wrong thing and turn people. He just says whatever his instinct tells him to say, but he has an instinct that is built upon years and years of studying people, understanding, and it comes from the heart. He's got the indictments, the Charlottesville comments, remember that, January 6th, and they're like, what on earth? And Trump says black people like him because they get indicted and he gets indicted. He banned Muslims with the travel ban. So how does this man keep winning? And they're baffled. They're beside themselves. They are scratching their heads. Look at this man. This man does not deserve to win. That's how they look at it. And what is, in fact, and remember, he took down so many political dynasties. And what is it about Trump? And look, obviously, it's tough to encapsulate in all one sentence. But Trump, he is real. He's as real as they come. He's not one of these fake, plastic, phony politicians who puts on a facade and takes a bunch of polls and figures out what people want to hear. He says what's in his heart. If he says it, you know he means it. You know that, because a lot of times he says something which then shocks people and people think there's backlash and they think he shouldn't have said it, and he doesn't care because it's what he believes. He sticks to his convictions. He does what he says he's going to do. He keeps his promises, and you know, they could take everything away from the man. I mean, they indicted him. They put all of his people in jail, and obviously January 6th, they took him off the ballot. The one thing that they cannot take away from this man is the immense support, the unprecedented, unparalleled. We've never seen support like this for a politician in the United States in history. Millions and millions of MAGA deplorables, they feel this deep sense of loyalty. He riles them up. They're enthusiastic, and they just love the man. And that's what matters really more than anything else when it comes to politics. And I'm thinking, you know, he kept winning and winning all these different primaries. I was almost sick of winning because he just keeps winning these primaries. And then he lost D.C. and he lost Vermont. So he didn't sweep the entire race. So now I'm not sick of winning anymore. You know, where did Haley win? Haley won the socialist places. I mean, Vermont is about as Republican as Fidel Castro. You know, when Vermont is just pretty much all Democrats, as is Washington, D.C. And let me tell you, I've been to Vermont many, many times in my life. It's a beautiful, beautiful state. Vermont is a gorgeous, it's a clean state. When you cross the border from upstate New York to Vermont, you can actually tell the difference because the trees are more trim and are more green, and the mountains, it's cleaner, the highways. There's something beautiful about the state of Vermont. But let me just say that the people in Vermont are not going to be winning a Nobel Prize anytime soon. I mean, these farmers in Vermont and the grocers, they're not exactly, and obviously the ski resort owners, they're not exactly about to join Mensa. But I want to give you some perspective, and then we got to get to the other news of the day. You know, Mitt Romney, okay, Trump, he clinched so early over here. Mitt Romney won in 2012 in May. He clinched the nomination, no, and later than May. He actually clinched it, I think, either May or June. Obama beat Hillary in June of 2008. John McCain won the nomination in March, but in Super Tuesday, John McCain only won four states. It was enough to get him past, basically, at that point. You know, there was nobody else. I think Romney came in number two, if I'm not mistaken, in 2008. But nobody has ever clinched the nomination, this kind of domination that Trump had, where he got like virtually 800 or 900 delegates out of 1,200. Nikki Haley got like a handful of delegates. And then listening to CNN's coverage of Super Tuesday, and it's bogus, it's a joke. There's nothing super about this Tuesday. They were all excited. They were playing it up. You know, I don't know if these networks actually believe Nikki Haley had a chance. I know it's like they don't really believe Nikki Haley had a chance, right? They were just, kind of building it up because they need some kind of drama. But then there's part of me, they were so disappointed and they were so deflated by Trump winning. It's almost like they actually believe, I'm talking about CNN anchors right now, that maybe they believed she had a chance. The disappointment was palpable. It reminded me of 2016 when they were just totally, totally baffled and totally devastated that Trump beat Hillary, which out of left field, nobody expected that to happen. I mean, CNN on Super Tuesday night was about as lively and animated as a public library or like an assisted living facility, except even more dull and more quiet. And they're saying to themselves, what do we need to do? How do we get rid of this man? I mean, they've thrown everything they possibly can. And this is the worst case scenario for the Democrats, for the media. You got Trump, who clearly, has such an incredibly, incredibly strong following and enthusiasm is through the roof. And then you got Biden, who is the worst possible. I mean, the weakest candidate they could ever imagine. And like I said, he's just come back from the dead every time they count him out. And so many politicians, you know, by the way, very interesting tidbit here. I was looking back at the research to see what these other candidates did back in, you know, in the past, as far as how, you know, how much better Trump did, how much earlier he clinched than the other candidates. And I looked back at Mitt Romney, as I said earlier, and Mitt Romney, when he actually won the nomination, it was, it's really interesting because he was actually at a fundraiser held by Trump. I just happened to bump into this. And Donald Trump, remember Donald Trump at the time was strongly active, very heavily active in the Republican Party. And, Mitt Romney, when he clinched the nomination, he was actually making political call, did a controversial appearance at a Las Vegas fundraiser with surrogate Donald Trump, and Politico was all upset. They were accusing Trump of racism. This was 2012, and Trump was a big supporter of Romney. Of course, Romney ended up throwing Trump under the bus, as we know, and trying to literally sabotage Trump in 2016, which is a disgrace. And Trump and Romney, of course, voted to convict Trump in the impeachment trial in the Senate. Romney was, I believe, the one Republican senator who voted to convict Trump along with a bunch of Democrats. That was egregious. But Romney was with Donald Trump in 2012 at a fundraiser, a very, very high-end fundraiser. And Politico said that Trump raised eyebrows by questioning Barack Obama's birthplace. And remember, Trump is what they called a birther. Trump back in 2012, you know, kept saying, show us the birth certificate. He kept questioning whether Obama was a legal citizen of the United States and was actually born in the United States. Legal citizen is not enough to be the president. And they insinuated that Trump was a racist even back in 2012 for questioning, because Trump was one of the big people who was behind that whole birther movement, and it got a lot of people upset. Eventually, they got the birth certificate released from Hawaii, at least part of the birth certificate. That was because of Trump and all the pressure he put, and they insinuated that Trump was a racist for questioning whether Obama was born in the United States. All right, so like I said, the State of the Union coming up Thursday night. I love how the media is saying this is Biden's chance. Biden has the chance now to send a powerful message. He has a chance to really, really show how strong he is, and to defy all these people who claim that Biden has dementia and that Biden is senile and that Biden has cognitive decline. Well, he's going to get up there and he's going to prove them wrong. I mean, all that's going to happen is he's going to get up there and he's going to reinforce it. And they are going to be holding their breath. These Democrat, Biden strategists and Biden campaign, they're sitting there like they're not going to breathe. They're not going to exhale for 45 minutes hoping that he doesn't have some sort of, because there's nothing you do. It's live. The whole world is watching. There is no way to spin it. And one major blunder, I mean, he already has blunders all day long with Egypt and Mexico and everything else, and he's reading it off a teleprompter. But if he just has a brain freeze that's just a little bit beyond what we see normally, that could be devastating. So we're going to keep an eye on that. All right, Michelle Obama announced she's not running. And like I said, I don't necessarily believe that she's not running just because she says she's not running. It would not be the first time that a politician claimed they weren't going to run for office and then changed their mind. Barack Obama, her husband, promised that if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor with Obamacare. That is maybe the biggest lie, the most egregious lie in U.S. history. And there have been many. Obama promised to close Guantanamo Bay first day in office. He left 8 years later. Guantanamo is still open. He promised to move the Israel embassy. Trump actually kept that promise. Clinton promised. Obama promised. Bush promised. None of them kept that promise, of course. That's what politicians do. So the fact that Michelle Obama says this, you know, doesn't faze me. And look, I'm not sitting here saying I believe Michelle Obama is going to be the candidate. I believe that Biden is going to bow out at some point. And I may be wrong about that. You know, I don't believe that with strong conviction. It's not something we could possibly know. Trump winning the primaries, as we predicted, like that, I had pretty much no doubt. And not just 3-4 months ago when I saw the polls. I'm talking 2 years ago. This I don't know. But what I will say is this, that Michelle Obama, there's a lot of rumors now. If anything, this statement that she's making reaffirms the fact that she might be running. And I'll tell you why. Because the last thing she wants is anyone to think it's a conspiracy. See, here's how it plays out, right? They don't want people to think, which is what I think, that Obama's really calling the shots, Barack Obama, and he's going to kind of tell Joe Biden, listen, it's time to go. So, and I don't know, we'll see, but that's what, that's my theory, my suspicion. So, if that happens, and if Biden in a month or two announces that, you know what, he decided not to run for the better of the country, the better of the party, whatever, and now, if Michelle Obama becomes the nominee, everyone's gonna say, oh, it was rigged, you know, Obama's the one who basically controlled the whole thing, the narrative, and that's gonna make the Obamas look bad. So they don't want it to look that way. They want it to look like, She was drafted. People begged her. You know, she was kicking and screaming, I don't want this, I don't want this. No, no, you need to do this for the sake of the country. That's how they're going to want it to appear, right? So why are they coming out? Why is Michelle Obama making the statement? Because there's so many rumors going around, oh, Biden's not going to be running and Michelle Obama's going to be the candidate in his place. So they want it to look like it's spontaneous and, you know, like I said, she was drafted and she was begged and pleaded with. So then that's what I'm thinking is the way this is going to play out. It's not like Biden is just going to announce one day I'm dropping out. There's going to be some kind of episode. There has to be some kind of health episode that's going to happen or some sort of scandal or Hunter Biden or something where it's just going to be put enormous pressure, but they're going to make it look like Biden was forced out. Not like the whole thing was planned and conspired and colluded with for months in advance. Okay. So that's why Michelle Obama, she's going to want to make the statement now. And then if later she changes her mind, listen, I meant what I said. I wasn't planning to run. I meant that I'm not going to, push out Joe Biden. I meant that if Biden's a candidate, I'm not going to try to interfere. But if there is a vacuum and there's no candidate and the party's begging me, then how could I say no? That's how it would play out. So again, I'm not saying that that is going to happen. Maybe take her at her word and she's really not going to run, even if Biden does step down and does drop out. But I'm just not convinced is my point. Mitch McConnell has endorsed President Trump. And what bothers me so much about Mitch McConnell is, yeah, he back and forth. He doesn't like Trump, then he does like Trump, then he doesn't like Trump. He's such an opportunist. I don't see how you can be. Everyone knows it's no secret that that Mitch McConnell pretty much despises President Trump. But what's amazing is, like, he's so transparent because when Trump was running the first time, and McConnell didn't expect Trump to win, McConnell said afterwards he was pretty much shocked, like many of us were, that Trump beat Hillary. But then McConnell, suddenly Trump is president, and McConnell needs Trump very badly as the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, and suddenly McConnell and Trump are best friends. Then January 6th happens, McConnell throws Trump under the bus, and now Trump wins. And because remember, after January 6th, everybody said, all right, that's it. Trump is done. Those of us who stuck with Trump through thick and thin, there are very few, there are many. I'm not saying there are few, but a lot of Republicans said, oh, Trump is done. That's it. He's not coming back. So McConnell was one of those people. So that's what troubles me is that, like, it's so fake. Tell me if I'm wrong, but McConnell, what happened was right after January 6th, McConnell gave a scathing speech, blasted Trump. He called Trump disgraceful. And he said the Capitol rioters had been fed wild falsehoods by the most powerful man on earth because he was angry that he lost an election. Think about what McConnell said about Trump. How demeaning, how vicious what McConnell said. And remember, Trump's the president at that point of your party. And McConnell, and he, again, you think Trump is out. That's it. He's down for the count. He's finished. So McConnell, when Trump is in power, he's his best friend. Then January 6th happens, Trump's on his way out, and that's what McConnell says has been fed wild falsehoods by the most powerful man on earth. Back in 2016, and now Trump wins the nomination, and suddenly McConnell's his best friend again. I'm not into that. Now, in July of 2016, McConnell refused to basically endorse Trump or support Trump, even though Trump was the Republican nominee. And so that's what's pretty amazing, is like the back and the forth over here. Trump in 2016, after he had already won the nomination, right? What did McConnell say? McConnell said, Trump needs to change, in my opinion, to win the general election. I've told him, you're a great entertainer. You turn on audiences. You're good before a crowd. You have a lot of Twitter followers. That works fine in the primaries. But now in the general, people want a level of seriousness that is typically conveyed by having a prepared text and teleprompter and staying on message. So my hope is that he's beginning to pivot to a more serious and credible candidate in the highest office in the land. And then he was asked by the interviewer in 2016, he's saying, does he not meet your threshold of credibility? And McConnell said, he's getting closer. So how incredible is that McConnell basically said, oh, people can't, the same criticism we've heard again and again about Trump. He can't win. He needs to be more presidential. That was McConnell was saying. And Trump never changed, of course. He never wavered. And Trump ended up winning anyway. But McConnell, again, it depends which direction the wind is blowing. I don't like opportunists. All right. In other news, AG Merrick Garland is vowing to fight voter ID laws. He says voter ID laws are racist. And he says that the idea, the notion that you're going to need ID cards, you're going to need like a driver's license or some other ID to vote. He says that's a plot to give the minorities a disadvantage. How big a racist is Merrick Garland? It's a disgrace that the Democrats get away with this narrative saying that black people are not able to have a driver's license. I mean, I don't believe that it's harder for blacks or minorities to obtain a driver's license or an ID than anybody else. So, and this is what they do. They invoke the race card. Now, by the way, the real reason they don't want voter IDs is because they want to cheat, obviously. But it's disgraceful the way they go and invoke the race cards and manipulate they race bait, right? And they manipulate blacks and minorities to make it seem like they're trying to protect them when all they're really trying to do is rig the election. So he appeared with Kamala Harris, not Kamala, Kamala. Oh, by the way, did you see? I got to mention this. There was a news reporter who talked about colored homeowners, a news reporter in St. Louis, a news anchor. You know, he was telling people about a story that was coming up, and he said, coming up, colored homeowners are having trouble obtaining mortgages or something like that. That was the term he used, colored homeowners, to refer to homeowners of color. And then the next day, he had to apologize, and apparently somehow, they don't even know how this happened, but the people who wrote up the story, he was reading off the prompter, and I guess, why is he apologizing reading off the prompter? I guess because they expected him to flip it in his mind on the spot. You know, even though, I mean, that's what these people do, is they read teleprompters. But somehow the producer, whoever it was who was writing the copy, wrote colored homeowners instead of homeowners of color. Now, what I find laughable, and you already know this, what I'm going to say is, what's the difference between people of color and colored people? Literally had to apologize, beg for forgiveness. Remember that time there was a sportscaster who said colored people, and then he had to like beg for forgiveness and apologize, and he got suspended because, oh, I meant people of color, not colored people. And you're talking about Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Obama, any black activist, Kamala, they always talk about people of color. And not only is that not racist, but that, like, you're saying the praiseworthy thing. That's like the right way. It's like honorable to say people of color. And you say colored people. Grammatically, people of color and colored people mean the same thing. You know, if you say, balls from the game, or you say game balls, right? A ball from the game, ball of game. I don't even know how you'd say it. But if you say, oh, that's the game ball, you know, that's the baseball bat. That's the bat of baseball. I mean, one sounds a little bit more awkward than the other, but it means the exact same thing. You know, here, do you want a colored painting or a non-colored painting? So it could either be a colored painting or a painting of color, right? But when it comes to people, and they mean the exact same thing, people of color, oh, people of color, you're so sensitive. You appreciate and respect minorities. Colored people, you racist, you're fired. It makes absolutely no sense. So same thing with Kamala and Kamala, that like you call her Kamala and you're a racist, you call her Kamala. Nobody's ever been able to explain these things to me. It is totally arbitrary, totally made up. But either way, Garland, he said that voter ID laws are discriminatory and unnecessary. And he talked about a history of voting rights of black Americans being suppressed since the end of slavery. So he's invoking slavery and invoking racism. And he says that voter ID laws made it harder for millions of eligible voters to elect the representatives of their choice. And they threatened the foundation or system. I understand the DMV can be confusing sometimes, but black people can figure out a way to obtain a driver's license. And by the way, the majority of Americans support voter ID laws, including 60% of Democrats. And you need an ID to buy liquor. You need an ID to drive a car. And that's not racist, right? You need a license to fish, to go fishing. Is it racist that you need a driver's license to drive a car? Because black people are going to find it harder to get. And it's such an insult. It is such an insult. And it's so racist. And it's a bogus thing that they invoke race over here. And Garland was almost a Supreme Court justice. Now, this has a lot to do, all these illegals that they're allowing into the country. They're allowing them in for two reasons. Number one, they drive up the census. And this is why Trump made such a big deal over the census issue and the Democrats pushed back so hard. Because what happens is when there's a census, right, they determine two things based on the census, which are very important. They determine which districts are going to get the most federal dollars based on the population in a given district. And they determine representation, right? So different cities are going to have more congressmen based on the census. So what they do is they place all these illegals in these sanctuary cities in California and New York. That gives them a lot more federal dollars unfairly because these illegals shouldn't qualify for that. And it gives them more representation. They get more representation in Congress because they claim that the districts are really inflated bigger than they are because they allow all these illegals in. Right. So that's really what it's about. But it's also because they want these illegals to vote. And, they want to sneak them into the ballots. And the more illegals that vote are going to vote Democrat, of course, because they know you know, who gives them all the social programs and who got them into the country illegally in the first place. So they want all these illegals to vote. That's why they want to abolish voter ID. So it's all the same strategy. They want as many illegal voters. They want to cheat as much and rig the election as much as humanly possible. A little bit more on the Supreme Court decision that Trump allowed Trump to stay on the Colorado ballot. And, of course, Trump dominated in Colorado on Super Tuesday. The left is having a meltdown. This is really devastating. I just want to make it really clear, because you have some people on the left calling for the dissolving of the Supreme Court. They're calling for the Supreme Court to be dissolved because they are so incredibly disappointed. You know, you know why? Because you have these leftist justices. How do people on the left call for the Supreme Court to be dissolved? What about Kagan and Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson? The answer is, this is so devastating to them because there's no way to spin this. They can always spin it and say MAGA, Republicans, da-da-da, conservatives are on the court. Trump packed it with these radicals. You cannot say that here. And remember, this was their plan for years, was, oh, Trump's an insurrectionist. In fact, those of us who believe that January 6th was orchestrated by Nancy Pelosi and by the Democrats, the reason they did it was because they were hoping to disqualify Trump from the ballot. And then Colorado goes and follows through in a bunch of other states, and it gets struck down by the Supreme Court, and they can't go and say, oh, yeah, well, it was struck down because it was a 6-3 decision. No. All of them. It wasn't even 8-1. It's devastating. It's a death blow to the left. And the Secretary of State of Colorado, a Democrat, she said that she put out a statement and said, I'm disappointed in the Supreme Court decision. And that's what's killing them, is because you can't discredit the decision. It's 9-0. So, but she said, I'm disappointed. Now it's going to be up to the voters to decide whether they want an insurrectionist in office in November. She's disappointed that it's up to the voters to decide. She literally said that. Those were like her exact words. And think about what they want. They, in the name of democracy, they want to have basically 1, 2, or 3 states determine who's the president for the entire country. Because that's what's going to happen, right? If Trump would be taken off the ballot in 5 or 6 states, that would be enough to totally, you know, eliminate him from the election. So they want 3, 4, 5 states, because they're Democrat states, blue states, to literally determine the fate of the entire country. It's just it's totally disgraceful. All right. Anti-Semitism, of course, is rampant. By the way, we're not going to get into this now. The Meron Commission has finally come out with its report. Very, very long report. I've gone through some of the report. I hope to go through more of it. And, you know, they really are claiming that there's a lot of culpability among the leadership in Israel over Meron, and that the government really knew for years that there was a lot of danger, you know, and they begged the government to do something about it, and nobody did. So they're spreading the blame around, including to Bibi Netanyahu. That is not something we can get into now. That's a whole separate show, but it is something we definitely should discuss in the coming days. And of course, just a horrific, horrific tragedy, Rahman al-Islam. It's just unthinkable. Here we are almost 3 years later, and it's just as devastating as it was when it first happened. You know, it's just so, so, so horrific. And now they're coming out with, you know, who in fact was culpable. And I think that is something that's important for us to dive into at some point to analyze. Just mentioning that, but that's not for today. Anti-Semitism is rampant, especially on colleges. In the latest incident, mezuzahs were ripped off doors on campus. This is on the campus of Smith College. At Smith College, there were mezuzahs ripped off doors. I don't know if it was dorm rooms or the Hillel, but either way, anti-Semites ripped mezuzahs off of doorposts, and swastikas were graffitied on campus. In response to that, the president of Smith College has denounced Islamophobia. Islamophobia, can't make this stuff up. An email was sent out by the president of Smith College talking about the mezuzahs and the swastikas. It mentioned the fact that mezuzahs were ripped off of doorposts. Used the word mezuzah in the email, and the swastikas, the graffiti, and it said, quote, "We are disheartened by these unsettling events, and we reiterate in no uncertain terms there is no place for anti-Semitism or Islamophobia or any hate on campus." And he says that the college is considering divesting from companies doing business with the IDF. This is his response to mezuzahs torn off and torn down and graffitied swastikas on campus, bashing Islamophobia and equating that to anti-Semitism, which is sickening. I mean, it's despicable. The anti-Semitism is rampant, especially colleges, but everywhere in America. And there's no Islamophobia, none. And then talking about how they're considering divesting from companies that do business with Israel and with the IDF. Biden, as we said, is sending chartered flights. He's been sending chartered flights to pick up illegals in Central America, deliver them to the United States. These are not even asylum seekers. This is a special parole program that they've been taking advantage of and using it totally out of whack, out of control here, using this parole program, because they're literally bringing in illegals who have no right to be in the United States, even the guise of asylum seeking, which is fake anyway, because people use it, claim they're being persecuted. They're not. They don't deserve asylum, but they just never show up for their hearing. But that's not even this. This is just they for no reason. It was only discovered through a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act, and they just have this parole program that they're just abusing left and right and letting hundreds of thousands of illegals in. It's mind-blowing that they get away with this, and it's surreal. It's really surreal. They're just using parole as a loophole to be able to allow illegals in and fly them in. They get a chartered flight. If you are a U.S. citizen and you're out of the country, you've got to pay. But if you're an illegal and you're out of the country, just go on this app and request a flight, and Biden will swoop in and fly you to the country. This is a new report from the Center for Immigration Studies. President Biden has flown in about 320,000 illegals, and they bypass border security data. This is not even included. When they talk about the numbers, all the millions of illegals, doesn't even include these 320,000. So the Center for Immigration Studies said the public now knows that CBP has approved secret flights that have allowed over 300,000 illegals into the country, and they use an app. There's a special app where you make an appointment for parole. I'm saying it, and it's mind-boggling. I don't even believe it. Like, I know it's true, and nobody's disputing it, but they just go on this app. They're in Guatemala or Honduras, wherever they are. Go on the app and request a parole hearing or a parole appointment, and they send them a flight, and they get on the flight, and they come into the United States, and they bypass security. And they get released into the country. Let me just say this, okay, to President Biden. You don't need Congress to stop flying illegals into the country, okay? All this stuff about how they need Congress. We need Congress to act. We need the legislation. And Trump's the reason for the border mess. You don't need Trump, and you don't need the legislation or Senate or Congress or any of that in order to stop allowing illegals to go on an app, request a flight, and then you go and you send a flight to bring them in. It's the CBP One app. It was launched in the beginning of 2023. We told you about this app. Illegals are allowed to apply for travel authorization and temporary humanitarian release, stay in the United States, and be eligible to work. They get a work authorization for 2 years for nothing, for just going on an app. Violent crime is getting so bad in New York City and the subways. Governor Kathy Hochul is deploying 1,000 National Guardsmen, state police, and MTA police to patrol. She's sending in 750 National Guardsmen, 250 state troopers, and they're going to be checking bags of people at subway entrances. This is unreal. I mean, Kathy Hochul and the Democrats in New York, and Cuomo, blame him as well. Their policies, plus Alvin Bragg, the woke DA, their policies have allowed crime to be rampant and out of control. The subways are a nightmare, the worst that they have ever been. And now she's sending in the National Guard. And in addition, listen to this, and there's just rampant crime in the subways, and it's a disaster. The whole experience is just a nightmare. Hochul is begging DAs to keep repeat offenders out of the subways. You're the reason that the DAs are letting, and I'm not condoning the DAs over here or defending them in any way. They are evil. They are evil. Well, Alvin Bragg is an evil human being, and he loves criminals, and he said it. And he loves drug dealers, and he cannot stand innocent people. That's what it's all about. But Governor Hochul, she had the ability to do bail reform and go back to a bail scenario where these people, if they're repeat offenders, they remain in jail and they cannot get out. Or if they get out, they get out with bail. But now there's no cash bail. There is no bail. So she refused to do that. She refused to reform the bail situation, which is that they are allowed out of jail. Virtually any crime they commit, they can come out 100 times. They commit the same crime, they get released without bail. It's a disgrace. She's begging the DAs, but it's her rules that have enabled them to do this. All right, let's get to some callers here. A caller said, you know, we've been talking about Nikki Haley a lot. And, you know, what bothers me about Nikki Haley is she talks about the national debt a lot, which I don't think that message resonates too much. And she's right. She's right about the national debt. Then she talks about Ukraine. You know, she's like a quasi, she's not a conservative, but she's like quasi-conservative on foreign policy and when it comes to fiscal issues, she's a conservative. But then there are other issues where, you know, she really sold out. We've been talking about that a lot. And a caller said, doesn't she need to sell out? Don't you need to sell out on some of your principles? If you're going to win an election, you need a broad base. You need to appeal to a lot of different people. So don't you need to kind of stay vague and kind of sacrifice some of your principles and values in order to win an election. Then you get into office, and then hopefully you act on principle. That was what the caller said. And look, winning an election is tough. I understand that. And, you know, I understand that you have to be very strategic. And sometimes if you're very strong in one direction, that, you know, they say that. They say in the Republican primary, if you're conservative, you win the primary. But then in the general election, people want a moderate. You want to get the independents. Or the other way around. If somebody's very liberal, very radical left in the Democrat primary, they might win the primary. But then when it comes to the general, they won't win the independents if they're socialist. Right? Bernie Sanders almost won the primary back in 2020. So I get it, you know, but like, I'm sorry, you know, Trump never sacrificed on a single principle. He seems to be able to win very well. So it's a tough sell. I used to believe it more, and then I started to realize that, you know, if somebody's a very strong candidate, even if they're strong in their convictions, that can go a long way. But I understand the point. The point is that he's trying to make is that, listen, you know, Nikki Haley, it's not like she suddenly became a Bernie Sanders socialist. It's not like she suddenly, you know, is in favor of, I don't know what, you know, some kind of radical leftist policies. You know, she just moved from being a staunch conservative to being a moderate Republican. Okay. You know, Reagan managed to win. Bush managed to win. I don't know, but I hear the caller's point. Another caller said, you know, Governor Hochul, we told you Governor Hochul's abolishing the need for a high school diploma so that illegals can get priority for jobs in New York State. And the caller said, hey, one second. Governor Hochul has been on a jihad against the yeshivas, right? Governor Hochul targeted yeshivas because education is so important, and it's so important to have a certain skill set, right? Democrats want to protect the institution of our education system. So, you know, our country cannot function if people don't get high school diplomas, if people are illiterate. That was their big issue with yeshivas. Great point the caller made is that here they're going and abolishing diplomas, the need for a high school diploma, as long as you're illegal. You want to get a job, they want to make sure illegals get jobs. So illegals or minorities or Democrat voters, they don't need to have a high school degree, no problem. But, oh, if a yeshiva person doesn't have a high school degree, then that's a threat to our country. And that we have to stop that. We have to abolish the yeshivas or come in and just revamp their curriculum, because there's nothing as sacred as a high school diploma unless you're an illegal. All right, that's going to do a great point. That's going to do it for today. Congratulations, President Trump. On to the general, and we will see you next time.